You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's up? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice. We're so excited to be back talking with you about the Toronto Blue Jays. If you haven't subscribed to The Athletic already, now's the time to do it. Head over to theathletic.com/spinrate. Find everything that Caitlin writes about the Blue Jays. Read about that amazing interaction between the fan, the young fan, and the Yankees fan, and the Blue Jays guy handing over the Aaron Judge home run. Caitlin with Lindsay Adler wrote a really great story about that. So like I said, make sure you do that. Head over to theathletic.com/spinrate. Subscribe. Make sure you subscribe to the show, which we bring to you twice a week. At the end of the weekend, usually, you hear me and Caitlin McGrath, as I mentioned. We're talking about the Blue Jays. During the week, you get me. You get former Blue Jays starter Ricky Romero, who joins me today. Ricky, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's not the afternoon for you. I should stand corrected. I'm usually a stickler for
morning.
That. Yeah, good morning. Good morning to you. I will be on the West Coast as the tomorrow. So I am excited. If you're listening to this here the day in the couple days after we record, come on out on Friday to the Vancouver Canadiens game. I'm going to be there at the Nat. I've never been. I'm super excited. Oh. You've been out there and did some stuff with them before, didn't you?
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's awesome. I miss the Nat. It's a great little ballpark to catch a ball game. And Vancouver, man, I mean, it's an awesome city too, aside from the stadium. Yeah, it's always a good atmosphere. Obviously, before it was a short season team. Mm-hmm. I believe now it's a low A team. Mm-hmm. So yeah, man, enjoy it. That should be fun.
Yeah, I haven't been to Vancouver in almost 20 years, so I'm excited to go back, and I'm excited to go and check out the Nat and watch the Canadiens game, and maybe do a little bit of work. Maybe you'll hear something about that in the next coming weeks.
Make sure you get you that Canadiens hat. Have you seen it? Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
They came out with they brought back some like old school uniforms. Mm-hmm. And it says Canadiens across the top of the hat. It's freaking dope, man. If you get a chance, I've been wanting that hat. And when I was there working, they didn't have it in stock, but yeah, I'm trying to get my hands on that.
I will definitely check that out. What about you? When you played, when did you sign? So you got drafted in June, and then did you sign right away?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay.
But we had Auburn, New York, out of all places.
The old New York Penn League. That's all right. That's not bad for travel, man. I guess, right?
I mean, it was interesting. Very interesting. Upstate New York is an interesting place. Thank goodness I was there only for about 2.5 weeks and then got a call up to high A. So that was good.
Back down in Dunedin, where I guess it's still high A, I think. Right. I will be honest, the minor league reshuffle from a couple of years ago has like completely screwed me up. I'm like, you know, they don't have Lansing anymore. Don't have Bluefield, which was a relatively new team. Now Vancouver's full season. So anyway, it's all over the place, but it's back in full swing. And that's the big, one of the big fun things about Vancouver this time of year right now. It's the first time they've been back in 2 years, right? Obviously, no season 2020. And then they were on the road. They were road warriors last year as the COVID restrictions and vaccine stuff was still working itself out. But they're back and better than ever and having a good time. So I'm excited to go to Vancouver. If you're in Vancouver, you want to come out, shoot me a note, follow me on Twitter, say, hey, what's up? We're here at the Nat. And when we can say hi, we can hang out. So we are not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Blue Jays. We're going to talk about Alek Manoah. We're going to talk about the value in getting a bit of an ass kicking, and also, you know, the resurgent Bo Bichette. I think we can always just give him a bit of a nod. We all knew this was going to happen. He's too good a hitter to be down for too long. But let's start with Alek Manoah. Man, he's good. That is my full blown capital A analysis. You heard there were some great quotes last night from Aaron Judge, who of course got him for a home run for the first time. But I don't know what else you can say about Alek Manoah, A, in general, but B, going in there and facing that really tough Yankees lineup. Well, of course, the Yankees winners of 11 in a row when we were sitting here recording this. He's just such a stud. I don't know that I ever saw that the ceiling that he's showing us. It's just his ability to get strikeouts and avoid walks, and just an unbelievable start to his career.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's been, I mean, I don't even know if I can say he's been as good as advertised, because he wasn't very much so advertised by the Blue Jays. He was a high draft pick. Yeah. But again, we've talked about this before, Drew. It was almost like it was the Nate Pearson show, and Manoah was kind of on the, you know, on the outside looking in that sense. Obviously when you're a first rounder, you're really not on the outside looking in, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be Nate Pearson leading this rotation and stuff like that. And this guy just comes in, and not only has he faced the Yankees this season twice, but he faced them like two or three times last season. It seems like every other week he's facing the New York Yankees. And when you look at the body of work that he's been able to do since he broke into the big leagues, man, I mean, the guy is that dude. He's that dude. He's just fearless on the mound. He's everything you want in a pitcher. He challenges you. He's not scared to throw his fastball. He's not scared to say, here you go, hit it. And that's the beauty of baseball sometimes with, you know, we saw the at bat against Aaron Judge where he froze him up on a 3-1 slider, and then he blows him away with the fastball, and he just had him guessing. And then the next at bat, he tries to throw a 3-2 fastball, I believe. Yeah, it was a fastball that he hit, and Judge hits it out for a home run. So it's just, it's the beauty of baseball and the beauty of the cat and mouse game between a hitter and a pitcher. And but yeah, man, I mean, it's been fun to watch. I mean, I don't even know what else to say about him, because I feel like people come up to me and ask me, they're like, can he keep this up? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, in baseball, sometimes you are going to have some bad outings, but I don't know. The guy doesn't seem like he's stopping anytime soon. And the biggest thing, I heard Dan and Joe talked about this yesterday during the telecast. And they were just saying how Pete Walker says he just doesn't overthink anything. He goes in, he knows what he has to work on. He doesn't overthink it. He goes in with his plan, and he's going to execute his plan, and that's it. It doesn't matter who's hitting or anything like that. And when you have a young guy with that kind of mindset where he's not overthinking stuff, it just tells you who he is, and he knows who he is. And I mean, he's got a little bit of that old school mentality when he's 60 feet, 6 inches, you see him talking to himself, and who knows what he's saying sometimes to himself, but it's fun. And the guy is locked in, and he's everything you want in a pitcher. He's been fun to watch.
Well, I think that he's everything you want in a pitcher was kind of the way that the quote that I saw from Aaron Judge that I'm going to kind of paraphrase, because I don't remember it exactly, but it was, you know, he throws a four seamer, throws a two seamer, and then he can just throw that wipeout slider. But the other thing, you know, you talk about Nate Pearson. So Nate Pearson's stuff will blow your mind, right? You see Nate Pearson and he can throw 99, he throws 100, he throws 101, and his curveball is filthy and nasty, and his changeup can be just as effective. I remember one of those first outings where Nate, you know, in 2020, Nate Pearson looked so good when he just sort of figured his changeup out. But Manoah, his velocity doesn't blow you away, but then you start to look and it's been creeping up throughout the year. He was touching 97 last night, which is like, that you're starting to talk about, like, his stuff needs to be in that conversation too. If he's touching 97 and it's heavy and it's hard to pick up because it's got that good spin. And I think that at bat against Judge was really the last one where Judge got him was really interesting to me, because he, like you said, he challenged him with the fastball a couple different times. He jumped ahead 0-2. And then he tried to challenge him with another fastball, but he missed, and it was over the plate, and Judge fouled it back. And it was like, whoa, hope he doesn't do that again. Excuse me, which was unfortunately a bit of an ominous warning, because, you know, the one that he did hit was, it looked like he and Kirk wanted it up, which I think is a great idea, but he just didn't quite get it up. But I, again, yeah, like, nobody on base, thanks to Aaron Hicks sort of running into an out. But just that ultimate amount of aggressiveness and battle with the stuff. I think you and I have talked about this multiple times, and we both are like so enthusiastic about his mentality and his approach, but his stuff speaks for itself. And there was a lot of talk when the Blue Jays drafted him that like he could have been, you know, one of the top guys in the draft, and they may have gotten a steal. And so far, it looks like they absolutely got a steal in that with his pick, where when he was still there, when it was their turn to select.
Yeah, no, obviously they knew what they were doing, the Toronto Blue Jays, and you got to credit the organization, the scouts, and everyone doing that dirty work to make this happen. And I remember, it was funny, man. I remember maybe it was a couple years ago. This is before anybody knew who Alek Manoah was. The Blue Jays lost in the playoffs. I think it was the year that they lost in when they played out of Buffalo, and they made the playoffs that year. And they lost that one game to Tampa. And there's this young kid, and I used to obviously follow him we had been following each other on social media, and a young kid that's never really played in the big leagues, has no idea, tweets, "Don't worry, guys, help is coming." And I was like, "What the hell?" You know, I'm like, who's this young buck talking like this? But you know what? He's backed it up, and he was right. And again, it shows the confidence that he has in himself in being able to say that and go about his business and be able to prove everyone that, hey, I am part of the missing link to this team. And he saw it. He believed in himself, and credit to him, man. I mean, I just remember seeing that tweet, and I was like, wow, like that's pretty ballsy for a kid who still probably has a while to get to the big leagues. And yeah, I mean, about a year and a half, maybe a year later, he's there making his debut. So again, it's almost like we're running out of things to say about him, because he's that dude, you know. And as a fan of the game, sit down and watch his games and watch his mentality and watch the way he approaches hitters. And it's nothing like that's going to, like, you're going to be like, oh my God, like this guy, you know, I mean, he has unbelievable stuff, but like, it's just the way he attacks, the way he believes in his stuff, that part of me, the mental side of it, the way he approaches the game. That's what I look at. And it's special, man. I mean, it for a 24-year-old kid to be able to do that and have that mentality. And shoot, man, I don't even know. You might know this, Drew, but how many bad outings does he really have in the big leagues? Maybe one or two?
Yeah, I think it's three. I would say it's three. There were a couple times where, and even though his bad outings weren't even that bad, right? But you know, it's the number one thing that, you know, we've all kind of moved beyond, you know, wins and pitcher wins as like the metric of, you know, a lot of significance. But at the same time, you know, the thing with Alek Manoah is that like he wins when they win, when he starts, right? It was just like that simple. Like Alec, yeah. So he had, there's one bad start against Baltimore last year and another bad start against the Rays, and a bad start against the Nats. But yeah, other than that, solid all the way along. But he wins when they start, and he's a winner, right? Like he has that winning mentality and that sort of, you know, he got that dog in him, as they kind of say. Like he's just you wish every guy could be that way. And you know, it's not fair to compare it or be like, I wish Nate Pearson was like Alek, but no, like Nate Pearson is Nate Pearson. Yeah. He's going to find his way, and he's going to, you know, his stuff is so good, and once he can kind of figure out his body, unfortunately, you know, staying healthy, the things that happen to him, he's going to be on his own. But you know, the Blue Jays have really got something great with Alek Manoah.
And I've said that all along. I even told Nate this one time during DMs, DMing each other on social media. I was like, man, you got to find your edge, not anybody else's edge. You got to find your edge and what makes you go, man, because in the big leagues, hitters, opposing teams will eat you up. If they smell blood, they're going to come after you and they're going to kick you down and they ain't gonna let you get up. And that's the difference, you know, in mentality. That's why I say it, you know, I mean, and it's a proven fact. It's the mentality that you have, that you carry yourself with, more than it is physical. Physically, all these guys can do it. I mean, they all have great stuff, but it's the mental part and overcoming little challenges. I mean, you saw it with Manoah yesterday. You're like, in the first inning, you're like, oh, like, is this the outing that where he kind of might have a little bit of a rocky start, and then he just settles in, and then boom, he retires about 11, 12 in a row, mm-hmm. and then gets in his groove. So, yeah, I mean, that's the part that for me, for Manoa, it separates Manoa from a lot of guys. You know, it's the mentality part, and he's good, man. I mean, I love watching him compete again. And somebody asked me this on social media. They're like, would you have let him come out for the seventh inning after 91 pitches? And I said, you know, early in the season, you know, 91 pitches, you know, yeah, I could see why they made the move. But, you know, eventually, I don't know about you, Drew. I mean, I'd like to see him get into the 100, 105, 110 range and let him go. I mean, he's a horse, man. He's a guy that you got to ride and I know he's got that in him to go out there. I know they say, oh yeah, well, he gave up the home run to Judge and then Rizzo hit a screamer for a third out. But at the end of the day, he got it. Rizzo's was an out, you know? I mean, it is what it is. It's about getting out, and I don't care how hard it's coming off the bat. Sometimes you just catch your second win after that inning and you go out there and you give another quality inning for the Toronto Blue Jays.
I think it is. Well, it's not one thing we can move on to talk about next, I think, which is that in the situation that the Blue Jays have found themselves in time and time again, which is they were in a tight game, right? They're in a tight game and they know that they can rely on their bullpen. So it's like, okay, you know, Alek Manoah, you gave us six strong, you battled at the beginning and then you were dominant for a long stretch of it. You know, Judge just got you. But where, you know, I feel like in today's game, especially, You have that confidence that you know you can turn to the bullpen and you've got guys that are getting outs back there. But the difference mm-hmm. was last night was that Blue Jays team and Blue Jays bullpen that has been operating with no net for so long kind of ran out of luck, right? There were some bad luck, obviously, there on Tuesday night with a couple bad calls, a couple, you know, reaching on an error, you know, which is hard to, it's hard to fault. I mean, it's an error and the ball is hit at him, right? So you think, I'm sure if you asked Bo Bichette on that, the ball that Stanton hit, that he would say, I should have made that play. That was the hardest hit ball of the year in all of baseball, which I heard Mike Petriello, who's sitting in with Sportsnet this week, which is really cool, of StatCast. Every single year of StatCast, Giancarlo Stanton has the hardest hit ball for every single year. So he hit that ball 119.2 or 0.8 miles an hour last night. It ate Bo Bichette up. It was a close play. There was some debate whether or not it would have, after the review, whether or not Vlad was able to keep his foot on the bag. Whatever. Here we are. But that's, again, when you operate with no net, a call goes your other way, or a guy hits a screamer and the shortstop's not quite able to make the play. And then the first baseman's not quite able to get his foot on the bag. And then, you know, it snowballs, right? And then suddenly, okay. And maybe Adam Simber was getting hit pretty hard. Again, you see the same thing where the Blue Jays we've talked to you and I before about the shifting and how, and they're moving players around really aggressively on defense, including the outfield. Well, both those doubles split the big gap they had when they were playing mm-hmm. both Donaldson and Marwin Gonzalez, I guess, kind of around, you know, the other way. And then there was this big gap in kind of the left center field, and both balls kind of found that gap. And then Julian Merriweather, just, you know, wasn't able to stop the bleeding, unfortunately, and sort of the parade started. And of course, the controversial tag at home plate. But this is what happens sometimes when you play all these tight games and you can't expect everybody to be lights out every single time out, unfortunately. And I guess it kind of caught up to them last night.
Yeah. And you know what, Drew, I'm actually looking forward to what they do tonight mm-hmm. and how they bounce back. Yeah. I mean, the team hadn't lost a series all season and good for them. And it's awesome. But these are the games where you just can't let it keep snowballing, losing two straight games leading to three straight, and then it snowballs to four or five losing streak. This can happen. I'm looking forward to how they bounce back tonight. This is an important game to me. And it's almost, we used to call it in college, we used to call it Attitude Day. And our Sunday games are called Attitude Day. And I feel like this is an attitude type of game for them. How are you going to bounce back from getting, you know, knocked down last night and it snowballing out of control? It'd be different, you know, if they lost 2-1, you're like, okay, whatever. We lost another close one, but the way it snowballed or it unraveled late in the game yesterday, it was very unlike them, and that's why I'm looking forward to see how they bounce back today.
And that's something I know Caitlin and I talked about recently as well, which was the Blue Jays have been playing not just the relievers have been so strong and obviously such great starting pitching, but they've been playing really good, crisp baseball. And that's just a really difficult standard to hold up, especially when you're playing 30 games in 31 days, that there's going to be that bit of mental fatigue. There's going to be those times where, shit happens, which kind of happened last night a little bit. Mm-hmm. The play at the rundown that was like, maybe it's just me and maybe it was a bit of like confirmation bias, but it felt like that rundown wasn't quite as crisp as maybe you'd like to see. In terms of how they were pursuing, I guess, Marwin Gonzalez up and down the line, and then the goofiness with the tag. I mean, at the end of the day, they made the play. The ump missed the call, which happens, right? But again, you can't rely on playing perfect, crisp, ultra efficient defense and pitching and operating without a net every single night, because sometimes a call does go the other way. Sometimes, yeah, there's a bad bounce. Sometimes a guy hits a ball 119.8 miles an hour at your shortstop and it's going to eat him up because he's never seen one hit that hard before, because nobody has. Like, that's hard to make a play. So, which is probably brings us to what we can start to talk about as well, which is they only scored one run again last night. So there are some concerns maybe with the offense. There were some good signs, I think. Obviously, Bo Bichette is kind of stacking up the hits this week. And then even Vlad really just turned on a couple balls and hit some real rockets up the middle at a late game. Double? Yeah, he doubled the center field in the eighth. An absolute missile off of Miguel Castro. But still just not scored a lot of runs right now. And there's some situational concerns. But Teoscar Hernandez is out on his rehab assignment with Bo warming up. And hopefully with Vlad starting to swing the bat a little bit better. You'd be crazy not to think that the offense isn't about to turn a big corner.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a bit of a struggle. And they're getting on base. They're just not hitting with runners in scoring position. And, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that whole clubhouse knows what's going on. It's funny. We're talking about this because this morning at the gym, out of all places, there's a Canadian guy who works out there, and he's a huge Jays fan. And he came up to me today. He's like, "Hey man, is today last night a type of game that where everyone's just throwing shit?" And I'm like, "No man, let's not panic. Let's not panic, man. No, it's not like that." I can guarantee you this much, that the offense knows that they have to pick up the slack. They know that. Everyone in that clubhouse knows that. And it almost, sometimes I feel like the hitters probably feel bad because the pitchers are going out there, the starting pitchers are going out there and they're doing their job. So the last thing you want is for this team to start pressing and start hoping for base hits to fall and for stuff to just go your way. The minute you start hoping, it's everything kind of starts going sideways. But if they just let the game come to them and they continue to stick to their plan, they're going to be just fine. Again, we know what this lineup can do. We know that it's so talented from top to bottom. I guess, Drew, it shows a little bit that two-time Silver Slugger winner Teoscar Hernandez is a big piece to this part of the lineup. And it's showing a little bit right now. I mean, when you're missing a key guy like that, it hurts. It hurts the lineup. And, hopefully he comes back sooner than later and they're back where they need to be and where we expect them to be. So I just feel like it really is hurting them a bit that he's not in that lineup.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There are, I talked about, you know, the bad bounces and bad luck and just sort of, especially early in the season where those sorts of things can get magnified. And for the longest time, it wasn't necessarily like the runners hits it with the runners scoring position, but the Blue Jays were able to get like the single clutch hit that they needed, you know, these timely hits. The one hit of the game was with runners in scoring position was like in the eighth inning or something like that. But somebody asked me, because, you know, we know the Blue Jays are really aggressive. And he asked me something that seems so silly and specific. He was like, well, I want, like, his view from watching the games was like the Blue Jays have really struggled swinging at the first pitch with runners on score on base. So he asked me to look it up. And I was like, well, you know, whatever, I'm not your monkey, but I did it anyway. And the Blue Jays have the worst production in that situation. They've seen 200, there's been 16 different times that they've swung at the first pitch with a runner on scoring position. They have two hits, two singles. They've got no, they haven't hit any extra base hits, which again, not who the Blue Jays are. The Blue Jays are happy to be aggressive. I think that's a probably reflection of a more of a league-wide trend where it's like, I can't fall behind. If I get to two strikes, like whoever it is on the mound, there's a million different guys. They've all throw 100 miles an hour and have a slider that moves this much. So let me swing at the one I see. So, but that's one of those things that, you know, like you said, you don't want to stop being who you are. The Blue Jays are an aggressive team. They've got aggressive hitters. Yeah. They're not there to walk. They're there to hit, and they've got hitters. So you can't help but think that having the worst, so they're weighted on base as we talk right now, weighted on base average, which is kind of a good measure for production. That's similar to baseball or similar to batting average, like 350 is really good. 400 is amazing. The Blue Jays weighted on base with, at the first pitch with runners on scoring position is 0.095, less than half of the next worst team. Like, again, that's like they've got two singles and that's it, and maybe like a sac fly. So, not what you want. Not what you want at all. But you figure it's going to turn around, and again, you add like the real versions of Bobichet and like the really well balanced version of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And then you start to add Teoscar Hernandez back in, and you get George Springer, who seems to have, again, she saves all his hits for like the maximum impactful moment. But you know,
then Kirk, our boy Kirk. I mean, he looked good again.
Extra base hit, Kirk.
yeah, and it's a good sign. Again, I know it's not where they want to be, but these are encouraging signs when you see, like you mentioned, Bo. Starting to find his groove, his swing. He's taking good swings at the ball, and they're not all going to fall for base hits. But when you take good swings, I know for a fact it makes hitters feel really good when they start feeling that good vibe in them. And then Kirk, obviously, we talked a bit about him last week, and seeing him come out and produce the way he did yesterday, and he's catching the shit out of it, man. Let's be serious. He really is, man. And you gotta tip your hat off to that. And you know, when he's picking off runners and throwing guys out and all that good stuff, I mean, it's just adds to the complete package. I mean, it when you're able to do that from behind the plate, it's relieving as a pitcher. So credit to him for continuing to stick to his plan and do his thing. So that's good. That's encouraging to see, because again, we still don't know when Danny's going to come back. So he is the number one catcher for now, and he needs to get going. And we've seen when he's been really good and how this team has rallied behind him. So at the bottom of that lineup, you're going to need Alejandro to come out and produce. So hopefully it's a good sign what he had last night.
I'm greedy. And I like a slugging catcher. You know what I mean? A guy that, you know, like a Rob Barajas, you know, somebody might not get on base a lot, but they hit the ball over the fence, you know? And I think you can look at the way that Kirk has produced, and if you break it down into these kind of more advanced metrics, it's like, okay, his production is lagging, but at the same time, it's like he's getting on base and he's putting the ball in play. And like, you know, as you saw last night, that extra base hit was a bit of a bloop shot, right? But you put the ball in play, good things can happen, and it's a counterbalance to some of the other guys in the lineup. You know, guys who might strike out a little bit more. So, and with the job he's doing defensively, you can't complain, right? And unfortunately, our guy Zach Collins has it's tough. It's a tough gig when people start being like, oh, he can hit. Let's game plan a little bit more for him and put that extra bit of pressure on him. But the defensive contribution that you're getting from Kirk, I mean, the throwing guys out is such a bonus, but the advances and the steps forward he's made in his receiving and just really presenting those pitches at the bottom of the strike zone, and as well as he has, it's just such an invaluable skill, and I love it. I mean, you're a pitcher, so you're going to say you like it, but this is something that with a lot of fans, it's a real bone of contention. I love it. I think it's something that someone can be good at. And it's not cheating, and you're not trying to trick the umpire. It's like, these are strikes, and he's going to present them as such. And I love to see it. I love to watch a good defensive catcher. I love watching Reese McGuire, right? He was a terrific, beautiful defensive catcher. But
like, I had one of the best. Yeah? I had one of the best, man, in Jose Molina. I'm sure you remember him.
Oh, my God. Well, he was like the kind of the front, at the vanguard of this, where the Rays signed him and of course and he kept getting jobs, and people were like, why are they hiring, why is Molina getting these contracts? And it's like, the Yankees were way out front of that as well. They were like, this is really valuable, because he catches 150 pitches a game, 200 pitches a game. That's, throw one guy out stealing, that's nice, but 150 pitches, and even if it's only 15 or 20 that are marginal, it's such a boon. It's such a boon, and it can only help your ball club.
Yeah, and he comes from that Molina University, right? I mean, we saw Benji do it in Anaheim, and then when he came to Toronto, and then obviously we all have seen what Yadier can do. But having a guy who can do that, who can quote-unquote steal strikes for you, it's amazing. You don't know how many times I was on the mound, I'd throw a pitch, and I was like, oh, that's a ball. And then the way he would bring it back and get a delayed strike call, he got more delayed strike calls than anybody I've ever seen ever behind the plate. And it just makes your job even that much better. You're like, okay, he's going to, if Jose can do that, then I can keep expanding away. And the hitter is going to, like, he's going to know that I'm going to hit that outside spot. So he's going to, his swing's going to get a little longer and stuff like that you start thinking about. So, as a pitcher. So yeah, man, I mean, when you have a guy like that you're able to trust, obviously, too, with the blocking and stuff like that, you can't ask for anything more as a pitcher and having a catcher back there that you can trust. And Alejandro is turning in to be that guy. I mean, it almost seems like he's Manoah, trust him with everything. And it's good to see again, a young catcher too, a young catcher that's still learning his way through the big leagues and learning hitters and learning game plans and all that stuff. And it's a lot of positive stuff again from young guys, that sometimes this type of stuff takes long for guys to be able to ingrain themselves with, but they're making it look pretty damn easy right now.
Obviously, Alejandro Kirk gets a lot of attention because he's his build, right? He's a big dude, and you see him running the bases last night, and I get DMs from people being like, well, he looks like Barney Rubble, but like, I really think that the catching and the receiving is such an athletic thing that, you know, the Jose Molina school of thought, where you would see him, he was almost like a statue, right? It was, everything was so small. The movements were so slight. His head was always so still, and he would set up, and it was like, you see the old, like, big swooping and swiping and dragging. It was just really subtle. But now Kirk is more of the new school, where he's down on one knee, but like just working so hard to get those pitches called for him and for his pitcher. And again, I kind of push back on the idea of stealing strikes. And the strike zone is never, we like to see, we see the lines on the TV, but it doesn't work like that, right? And more about, I've come around to the idea of, like, there are pitches that are like 50-50 pitches. Like, that could be a ball and it could be a strike. And I think that's, for me, that's a healthier way to think about it. Otherwise, you'd be pulling your hair out and cursing every umpire's name. Or it's like, it's just not the way that the world and the universe works. So with that gray in there, when you've got someone who's skilled, you can really kind of, give your team a boost.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing, that the most deceiving part of it, of watching a game on TV, is that box is there, but the angle that you have on TV is not what you think it is, So sometimes when those borderline strikes that they miss or that they get, and you're like, oh, that was a ball. Well, I mean, we're looking at it from a completely different angle. And I know it shows where the ball crossed the plate and all that stuff, but sometimes it's like, you have to be in the action, I feel like, to really see where that pitch is, and only those guys know sometimes. And I feel like usually when you don't see a hitter complain about, you know, a borderline strike, it's because they know it's a strike. You know, now the ones that Vladdy has kind of been getting called on him lately, some of those are, again, he's not a guy that complains a lot. And you know, when he's complaining, it's because it's not in the strike zone.
The more recent one, Vladdy seemed to me like he was complaining about the pitch before as much as the pitch that was actually called strike three, because, you know, that 1-1 pitch or, you know, that going from one strike to two is just huge.
It changes the at-bat. Yeah. It changes the at-bat.
The other thing about the thing that I say, and I've said this probably before, but if you watch most of your games on TV, the mound and the plate are so much closer together that it would blow your mind. And like I've told you, like I play men's league baseball, and I'll go behind the plate because I catch, and then I look at, you know, my buddy Jonah, who's up there, you know, on the mound, and I think, like, Chris Sale stands on that exact same mound, like that exact same difference. I'm like, I can't even imagine what that would be like. He's like 6 foot six. It's coming out of the dugout. It's 97. Then it's a changeup. No, it would make me upset. Like, physically, it makes me upset. It's too close. I don't know. You stood there. You got a hit.
Tell me about it.
Well, when it's coming back at you, when off the line drive.
Hey, man, I faced Cole Hamels in his prime, and in Philadelphia, my first career at bats. And like you said, I went up to the plate, and I hadn't been up at home plate in a long time, maybe since high school. And when I stepped in that box, I looked up and I was like, oh my God, this guy is super close. And the way he's releasing them and the way he's releasing the balls, Cole Hamels is like 6'4", maybe six. Yeah. He's a tall, lanky dude. And he was, again, in his prime, throwing like BBs right at me. And the first pitch he threw, I thought it was like 10 feet outside. And that thing, like, I looked back and Chooch was catching, and I was like, oh my God, that thing was right down the middle. And I'm like, and honestly, you really don't realize how close you really are. And for me, I went back to the dugout, and Dwayne Murphy was our hitting coach. I always tell this story. Dwayne Murphy was our hitting coach, and I went up to him and I was like, Murph, I guarantee you, you'll never, ever hear me talk shit about a hitter ever again, because holy smokes, he was dying laughing. And this is in the middle of my start. I'm pitching, and I just had to tell him that. I was like, I will never, ever bash a hitter ever again, because I don't know how, like, when you hear big league hitters, Drew, sometimes, and I played with some great ones in Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, and when they'd come in the dugout and talk hitting about picking up spin, and I'm seeing this off the hand, I'm like, how the hell do you do that? And, you know, and that to me is like, it shows you how special these guys are, these big league hitters are. And you know, again, it just makes you appreciate it that much more. That's for sure.
I read Sean Green's book, and I don't know if you're cross paths with Sean Green much, but he talked about little tiny things. Like, he would look at where, you know, the pitcher would be releasing the ball, and, well, if I saw a lot of white, that meant it was a changeup. Yeah, like, whose eyes are that good? How can you see that? That's crazy.
Yeah, I definitely didn't see shit when I was at the plate, man. I didn't see it. I just saw a ball coming at me, and I'm like, just swing and make contact, which I didn't. My first three career bats, I struck out, but I was pitching so well that Cito couldn't take me out. So, but yeah, it was not fun. And that's why the day I got a big league base hit, it was like the greatest thing in the world for me. I was like, ah, I can die a happy man now. I got a hit in the big leagues. I'm good.
Tommy Hunter had an interview last year. Was it last year when he played for the Mets? He was like, I got a knock in the show, man. He was like, he's pitched like 400 times in the big leagues. And he was like, I got a hit. I got a fucking hit. How crazy is that? Now, I'm going to ask you one. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, who was the best hitter? Like, which pitcher was the best hitter that you can remember playing with? I have a guess. I think I know who you're going to say. But is there somebody that could swing it pretty good?
You know, say it.
I think you're going to say Sean Markham.
Oh,
hitterish. He looked really hitterish.
Yeah, no, he was good. He was good. He was also like very athletic, though. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I thought you meant opposing pitcher.
No, because who did somebody Tim take Hudson. You deep? Did he hit a home run off you?
Tim Hudson.
Really?
Yeah. Look it up. It's my friends still send it to me. They're like, hey, dude, how was this moment for you? Tim Hudson in Atlanta. I was pitching a great game, and we had a pitcher's like duo. We were going at it, man. And he came up, and I'd been sinking the ball all night, sinking, working, sinking, cutting, sinking, cutting. Great changeup, had it going. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to sneak. What's he doing in the sixth or seventh inning? I'm going to sneak a fastball, a four seam fastball by him. Nope. He took it deep too, man. So he was on the scouting report too. They said, hey, make sure this guy doesn't beat you. He can really, really hit. And
interesting.
Yeah. He was probably obviously because he took me deep. I'm going to say he was probably the best one, but yeah, Sean Markham was really, really good. I'm trying to think who else, could handle the bat. I think Doc Halliday could handle the bat a little bit too. I mean, yeah, but Sean was very, very, very athletic. He knew what he was doing up. He didn't look like me. That's right.
I remember watching Jay Happ take BP. Jay Happ looked like he was a hitter, like he could play. And there's another guy who his name is Shohei Ohtani. He seems like he's pretty good as a pitcher who can also hit. That's crazy.
You know what though? I want to say Brandon Morrow in his whole career, I don't think he ever got a base hit. You might want to look that up. I'm not sure, but I think, I don't think he ever got a base hit in his career, man. And he did not look like a hitter, and he's my boy, but Brandon, if you ever listen to this show, I'm sorry, man, but I just remember you and I were probably the worst hitters on that team.
He seems like he's too smart to be a good hitter. Like he's like the guy, he's like thinking too many things, right?
100%. Yeah.
I love watching Brandon Morrow. I only had a chance to talk to him a few times. He's such an interesting guy. Love a great man, great career. What a good career. Guy pitched all seven games in the World Series. What can you say?
I know I'm going back, but I remember that Philadelphia series when we were all jacked up to be hitting, and Scott Richmond was part of that team too. Mm-hmm. And we were all hoping we would draw Jamie Moyer. And Jamie so he drew him, and he was so pumped and this and that. And let me tell you, man, Jamie Moyer made him look silly the whole night.
Oh, I can only imagine. Just twist you into knots. That's awesome.
So yeah, man, it was fun. It was fun. It was fun to hit, but it wasn't fun.
Once. Get your knock. Get in there. Not having to face. Like you hit. Did you hit right or left? You hit left.
I hit right. I had the curse, but I got a base hit. I drove in two runs. I threw a CG in St. Louis. That was a great, great day. So yeah, damn right, I remember that day.
That's awesome. That's so good. I think we should wrap it up. The Blue Jays are headed off to Cleveland to face the Guardians, which should be, again, finally a team after they face the Yankees here on Wednesday. Finally a bit of a break in the schedule. Not that Cleveland is a pushover. This is a big leagues. Everybody can play. But not a team that's in first place or contending for a playoff spot or, you know, other than Houston, who the Blue Jays have single-handedly ruined their April results. But really looking forward to what they can do against Cleveland. Obviously, Cleveland is in a bit of a rebuild but has a lot of talent. Jose Ramirez who has been talking about how much money he left on the table, man. Guy's out of his mind. He's like, oh yeah, it cost me like $100 million to stay. It's like, well, then why did you do it? What? But it seems comfortable there, I guess. But what a player, though.
I know you wish he was in the middle of that lineup. We all do. I mean, how good would he look, man? Shoot.
I love watching Matt Chapman play, though. We've talked so much about his arm and just like he's terrific to watch. But yeah, Jose Ramirez looks like he was born to play in the middle of this existing Blue Jays lineup. But Blue Jays fans will get a good look at him and the rest of the Cleveland Guardians, who have there's a few beasts running around in that pitching staff and in the back of the bullpen. So four games against Cleveland. Ricky, you and I will talk next week. And as I said at the top, if you're in Vancouver this weekend, come out to the Net and say hi. Let me know what's up. Thank you so much for taking the time, Ricky. Well, we can talk about you getting a hit every week if you want. How's that? That could be every week. We'll go pitch by pitch. One week.
I know people won't see it, but there's a reason why I retire that bat, by the way, man. And the batting gloves, everything. And yeah, my first win, my first strikeout, who gives a shit? It's my first hit that I have displaying in my man cave.
That is incredible. His name is Ricky Romero. My name is Drew Fairservice. We will talk to you next time on Spin Rate.